Welcome to Care in Action, the podcast by Care Austria, with Andrea Barstorff-Hager.
Welcome to the Care in Action podcast. I'm Andrea Barstorff-Hager, your host, and today I'm joined by a very special guest, Elisabeth von Trapp. A very warm welcome to Care Austria, Elisabeth.
Thank you very much for including me and for letting me celebrate with you this 80th anniversary of CARE.
It's a special honor for us, and I will very, very briefly introduce you. So Elisabeth von Trapp is a member of the very famous Trapp family, whose story inspired the very famous musical, The Sound of Music. I'm sure many of our listeners have seen it and know what I'm talking about. In our podcast, in our conversation, we'll talk about her family's legacy, what it means today, and the values that continue to guide her. Elisabeth herself is a well-known musician and singer. We will talk about all that in a moment in our podcast. So I already started, and I'm sorry I have to start like that, because you carry a very famous family name. So how is it to be a von Trapp, Elisabeth? Can you provide some information on that?
Well, first of all, I'm Elisabeth von Trapp with an S, and that changed when I spent time in Salzburg, and my teacher said it isn't with a Z, as it should be spelled in American or British. It's with an S. I am the middle daughter of Werner von Trapp, depicted in The Sound of Music as Kurt. So people who know the family and know about the family through The Sound of Music pretty much get to know the character names. But my father's real name was Werner, or Werner von Trapp. And my mother's name was Erika Klambauer, and she married my father in 1948. And here I am. I have four brothers and a sister, and we grew up totally surrounded by this magical experience of being with that family. And you have opened up for me a door of memory and experience. You are helping me journey into my life to understand it better. And to me, this is who we are as a global community. We come from very unique people that have given and really shown us how to live properly. My father sitting out in the field, Werner, rebuilt his life back in the late 50s. They disbanded as a singing and touring family. Many people don't even know this that have seen The Sound of Music. Most people don't even understand that after they left and crossed over, well, they crossed over into their, there's a train station behind their house in Salzburg, in Aachen, by Salzburg, where they lived. They just boarded a train. They didn't go over the Untersberg, which is how they show it so dramatically. But my father said the moment they stepped out of their home and stepped onto that train, a whole different life took over. And a life of faith in God, commitment to one another, and to rebuilding and figuring out how to make this work. And there were seven children, or young adults, and two daughters by Maria and Georg, with another on the way. So there were, in the end, 10 children and the two adults, a lot of people to care for.
May I ask you, what was the age of your father when he had to leave Salzburg and when he stepped onto this famous train?
Yes, he was in his early 20s.
Okay. So he was a young adult. And
yes. They were already the Kammerchor. They were already wonderfully and beloved by the Austrian community and theater or concert stage. They had won. Yes, they did win a first prize with a folk contest of folk music, and they sang yodels. They sang beautiful Austrian songs in 4 or 5 part harmonies, and they made a name for themselves even before they left. But this is another aspect of their reality. They were so visible. They could be targeted. And everything I tell you today about my life, somebody's going to listen to it and they're going to maybe even cry because they are in the very same situation and need to make a big decision in their life.
Mm-hmm. This story should be heard by many people, I think. And it could have happened also today. I agree with you. And it's happening now as we are speaking, because we know what is going on in the Middle East, not only in Sudan, in so many places where CARE has been working. And this interview also takes place at the occasion, and you mentioned it already, of 80 years of CARE. And our history as a humanitarian organization is directly connected to what happened 80 years ago in Europe and the US. It was the founding hour of our global organization. Let's go back to the Trapp story, because The Sound of Music is rather idealizing the whole thing. And it's a bit, I'm not a native speaker, but I would say it's a bit sugar-coated. And when I was a child, it was not so known in Austria. So it is only recently, I would say, recently is maybe not the right word, but in the last 10, 20 years that Austrians developed a sort of not only interest, but that Austrians got to know The Sound of Music, because everybody who comes to Austria, and this was already when I was a child, it was the case, knew The Sound of Music. But my parents, of course, they knew it, but it was not that common like it is before. And I have a guessing why this is the case. What is your take on that?
Oh, tell me yours first, and I'll tell you mine, because I'm very specific about what my perspective, but I would love to hear yours.
Yes, I volunteer to go first. I think it is really the darkest part of Austrian history, and the circumstances that made this well-known family a target, that they had to flee the country, is something that many people in Austria of the generation who was born shortly before Second World War or shortly after Second World War, they didn't want to go back there. And this is why it was maybe sort of ignored for many decades. But nowadays, we have younger generations. So I was born in 67, so long after the Second World War, I had the privilege to grow up in a quite international setting. So I had many friends from abroad. I studied abroad and everybody knew The Sound of Music. And my first exposure to The Sound of Music, believe it or not, was in Brazil when I was 20 years old. My family was in love with Austria and The Sound of Music. And I saw it first time in Sao Paulo at the age of 20, 40 years ago. And when I look at the schedules of the theaters in Vienna, at the Vienna Volksoper, they started it 5 years ago or something, production of The Sound of Music. And now in Salzburg, I know that this tour has been existing for longer and now you will have a museum there. But I think that my explanation might not be totally wrong. What is your? Be explicit about your explanation.
Your explanation is right on, and you are very brave to share your insight from your perspective. And this is my dialogue that I have and my life work right now. And I'm in my 70s. I've been a performer for all these years, and I've spent time in Salzburg. And the Landestheater finally in 2011 had the courage to present The Sound of Music, and they've had great success. But this is the, I spent time on Broadway developing a stage play about my father.
Mm-hmm.
It's still in progress, okay? But what I learned was this amazing team, Rodgers and Hammerstein, that knew how to weave stories, and they took on really intense issues, domestic violence, interracial relationships through South Pacific, and Carousel was domestic violence. And when they were offered this chance to tell a story about, well, here we have a woman who wants to be a nun. So you have to have the convent a part of it, children, and then this whole thing about the Nazi regime of that time, how to design it for an American audience. Now, here you have veterans that have come back from the war.
Yeah.
They had to speak to those veterans, if you can imagine, that had endured the war. So I believe they knew how to take a story, and that's part of Broadway. They make it into a mythical setting where you can engage in it. It's fantasy, but reality, but it's done in such a way. And you talk about sugar-coated. It was very sweet, and they almost felt that it was too sweet themselves, and they were worried about the reviews. But here's the point. When somebody gives of their whole being to making their craft, their work, their vision, there's another layer of reality and phenomenon that takes place and takes root. And it took root to the whole Broadway and the industry. In other words, even Hollywood took part.
Yeah, when Julie Andrews was very famous, right?
And Mary Martin was the first Maria, and she was the one with her husband who designed the and started this project. I believe it's a way of healing. It's healing after a war. I keep telling people, war is war is war. It's just destruction. There's a lot that's, they often say, oh, so many new inventions have been made and technology and all this. But in the end, it's destruction. And I feel like this one story survived to make it to the top so that there's a truth that will never be forgotten of a survival of mankind's resiliency and tenacity and faith. And everybody carries, I believe, everybody carries a pinch of faith. How do you nurture it? Nurture it. Well, my relatives, they stood by each other. And I watched this as a child, where they remade their lives. After they disbanded, they all had to make their new lives once again, but this time alone or with their partners. This is a, so I've been influenced by this regeneration of how strong they were. But guess what? Just like CARE, I wanted to open up. We were thinking of what is the statement I want to tell you about you to open up this whole podcast. I usually sing a song. How can I keep from singing? And I open my whole concert with that. And in that first verse, since love is Lord over all the earth, how can I keep from singing? And I've put it in a new context today. Since CARE has been over all the earth, sharing and caring, how can I keep from singing? Of the work you've done to teach people how to care again. Because when we have wars, we are robbed of caring. We just are at the groveling at survival. But one of the things that my relatives did, and you see the photographs of them, of that time when they left, well, they are out of harm's way. So people will say, maybe criticize. But the thing is, they strove to bring beauty onto stage, on the stage, to bring beauty to the hearts of people for healing and for renewal and encouragement. This is what I was born into.
And from an outside perspective, I think the amazing part of this family's history is also that they kept up and appreciated their country of origin that much and made it so famous in spite of the fact that they had to flee and they had to leave it, and there was no choice for them to stay. So I think this is really amazing that you make your place of origin, you keep it so dear to you, no matter how much you were hurt, because for sure it was very, very difficult for your grandparents to start again, to get rooted somehow in a new home, to have these 10 children, to do all this artistic work. I mean, this must have been enormous. And they still kept this Austrian heritage, and you speak really well Salzburg German until today. So you keep this positive side in spite of all. This is also telling a story that matches very well with the mission of CARE, because I fully agree with you. War is always destructive, and it is really harmful to everything and everybody. Nothing, no problem in this world can be solved by war. And I think really Austria has learned only recently, our civil society and maybe my generation is the first that opened up to reconciliation, to really say it was totally wrong what happened. And it took Austria decades to acknowledge that we had a really harmful and negative part in this Second World War. And I think the fact that nowadays the Sound of Music is also known to many people here in Austria is a positive sign for all of us.
I found this, there's a wonderful book by William Anderson, and it's The World of the Trapp Family with photographs, you know, and all this. I'll need to send you one. But in here, they come in 1938 and 1939. What people don't even understand is they came the first season, sang, but my grandmother was pregnant and it was not allowed for pregnant women to sing on stage. So all the tours were canceled and they were sent back to Europe. This to me is amazing. They had to restart all over with the process of coming back to the United States. But luckily they had a few sponsors that spoke for them, and one of them was a bishop from Philadelphia. But here it says, they knew well the meaning of the proverb, aller Anfang ist schwer.
Yeah, aller Anfang ist schwer, yeah, genau.
Every new beginning is hard, but with their music, their faith, and their unity, the transplanted family weathered the storm and took root in a new land. But guess what they were able to do, which some people can't, and they feel they have to integrate into the society, and they lose their identity. Their identity was how they dressed, and they chose to wear dental dresses, the girls, because they're five daughters, and my grandmother Maria, and they stood on stage wearing the dental dresses. Later on, they took on and wore beautiful concert dresses that were modified. The agent that they were, the booking agent that they worked with, helped them to become more Americanized. And my grandmother describes this process that was so painful for them. I believe that my grandfather's love of Austria, see, it goes beyond being a monarchist. It's the fact that he gave his life and his devotion in the First World War, that his identity and love for Austria grew. And he comes home and he sees it being destroyed and taken away. He lives the rest of his life that his Austrian family will survive, that Austria will survive somehow. And it can be with one small family that will speak Austria. And I find they were so courageous to stand on the stage all through the war years. We are Austrian, but there are different types of Austrians.
Of course.
There are different types of how we bring beauty to the world. There's every family brings something of that collects a collective truth and beauty and song, but they survive. This is the unusual part of it.
Absolutely. Elisabeth, how old were you when you first visited Salzburg?
I was a year old, because my father went on tour for 7 months, and they went to Australia, New Zealand, New Guinea, Hawaii, and they traveled the main throughout the United States for 7 months. My mother packed us up and took us to Salzburg in Pasch, where my grandparents, Oma and Opa, were living. And it was the one time my mother, with her five babies, took her family and just sat there with them and spent time. And that was very fortunate, because a year later, my grandfather passed away. So it was very fortuitous that we were able to meet him and feel his presence and essence. Even as a child, those are very important connections that we have with our relatives. And the spirit by which our relatives live and what they give us, they impart to us not just what they do, but who they are. And this is another aspect and phenomenon that I'm learning as I grow older, who we are, who we become. And when you add care to a moment, it transforms people to believing again. And I know this because this relief aid that my relatives took part in, I have heard stories from people in Sites book. They run, they find out who I am. They come with tears in their eyes. These are people in their 90s. And they say, we will never forget the relief aid that we received. But it's the same with care. They were working with care, so it was a mutual thing. I'm witnessing now the fruit of that time. It still resonates in people to the point where their emotions are so deep because it transformed their moment of need of scarcity into possibility. That is faith.
That's faith
right there.
And Austria is one of the top receivers of the famous care packages. Literally, every seventh Austrian has received a care package. And it is, one can say, it is an icon of Austrian history until today. And it's also a symbol for not only for our organization, but for taking care of each other. It is part of our daily language. If you take care of each other, you do a care package for a person that needs some kind of support. And this support can be many things nowadays. But having the opportunity to talk to you, Elisabeth, do you still remember when you realized I'm part of a very, because every family is special and has an interesting history, but your family has a very special history. So when did you realize, wow, that Sound of Music, this is us?
Yeah.
This is about my family. Can you still remember that moment?
Oh, there were several moments and several impressions that are very deep. The first is wearing a dental dress to my first day of school as a first grader. And a dear friend of mine who came to my brother's memorial service, the first thing she says to me when she comes to greet me and to comfort me, she said, "You wore a dental dress the first day of school." And I remember that. So I look different. And if I brought friends home, they couldn't understand my mother because she spoke German to me. They say, "What is she saying?" And it was awkward. And I had to teach them there are differences in the world. Then I met Mary Martin at the age of 5. That's when I thought, there's something interesting happening here. But I was too young to understand, but I was involved. So one of my earliest pictures where I'm running up the hill with her, she's holding my hand. And later on, I thought that was my first introduction to the real Sound of Music of Mary Martin building promotion. She was the first Maria creating momentum for this story. That was another impression. The other impression was seeing the Sound of Music with a traveling company that came to Burlington, Vermont, which is an hour away from home, and sitting there going, "Oh, that's my father." Lined up, you know, I was only 5 years old. "That's my father." And then my grandmother got up to speak at the end of the show, and my little 5-year-old heart was pounding. And then she spoke, and she was like a transformed individual. She was so different when we would visit with her in her apartment in her house. Here she was, so eloquent, so added that touch at the end, and people stood up and clapped for 5 minutes. And I thought to myself, what was I worried about for her? That was my first impression of as a child. Well, I shouldn't have been worried for her, but I saw there is something afoot. There's something happening here.
This is amazing. And coming from such a famous family where music played the main role, did you have any choice about what career you chose for you, or was it very clear right from the beginning that you will become a singer and musician yourself? Did you consider other jobs as well?
Yeah, yes. And my mother made sure. So I went to, I studied at a vocational school, Annahof, in Lane in Salzburg. So I learned dindel dressmaking because my mother loved making dindel dresses for the neighbors. After the Sound of Music, every mother on our in our neighborhood would come to the door, knock on the door, and ask my mother to make their daughter a dindel dress. So I would help my mother in the kitchen, cooking and cleaning. And I thought, I need to learn how to do this. And I had such an interest in cooking and sewing. And my Tante Hedwig, she taught me how to sew. But I watched my mother. She taught me, too. It's just I watched how my mother could put together a dindel dress in 3 nights.
I'm deeply impressed. I would never be able to put together a dindel dress, even not in 3 months, no matter what. This would not be flying. Now, you don't tell me that you yourself until today can do a dindel dress?
Yes, I had a business for 15 years, but that was after I studied and got my master's to be a teacher. And in the process of, and I taught music and I taught K through 6. So in other words, I didn't want to be a classroom teacher. I loved developing programs. And I put together all these lesson plans and then taught whatever they were interested in. So I learned in the process. But then our family hotel burned to the ground in 1980. And my uncle commissioned me to make all new dindel dresses for the wait staff. So if you have 30 women, 15 in the morning, 15 at night, I had to make 60 dindel dresses for them because they each had two. So I made a new business for myself. And I stepped out of teaching, although I taught children piano for a while, and that was fun. But then I started singing for groups of people that came to the new Trapp Family Lodge. And I sang at church. I sang at so many weddings and wrote my own music. And I realized I have to fulfill this musical dream that it's just in me. I studied music as well.
Yeah.
And then in 2002, the very same booking agency that were the ones that took care of my relatives, it was CAMI, Columbia Artist Management, a new person bought out. They sold out that part of the company. And I was invited to perform. And I had about 100 concerts for 3 years. And it started a whole different career for me.
So you fulfilled somehow the legacy of the Trapp family in your own interpretation, right?
Yes. And the difference is that I'm a soloist, but I had a wonderful cellist. If you Spotify my music, just look up Elizabeth Von Trapp, just Spotify it. I have 6 albums out. 4 of them are on Spotify, but it shows the beauty of this new experience of being together with musicians to create, and I say it's sculpting in tone, sonic sculptures of beauty that are lasting and that speak of this impression I got from my relatives when they sang. And it's a way of giving back. Every time I sing, I'm honoring my father. I'm honoring my relatives. Every time I learn a new song, I understand what it is to start over again. I'm now giving walking tours in Salzburg because I want people who have a enthusiasm about the Sound of Music. I want them to go further into their experience to find that one story can enliven your own story. And we each have our own story to sculpt and create. And if we don't, we are unhappy and we're not fulfilled. And that's when strife and anger and unhappiness that ends up, unfortunately, with a lot of violence. That's why we need to finish our stories and make sure we take time to nurture our own stories.
This was really beautiful and very poetic, Elizabeth. Thanks for sharing. I have a final question that closes also the whole circle, what care has to do with the Trapp family and what our legacies, how they are connected. I'm sure that you might have heard or that you know that care is focusing especially on women and girls in its work. On gender equality, that girls have access to education, to medical care, all the things, because in many places in the world, as you know, and also our appreciated listeners know, it is really a disadvantage to be born as a girl or to live as a woman. So in your life, did you ever experience or did you ever feel yourself that it is more difficult maybe to grow up as a girl, or did you see disadvantages, or was your life framed by equality? Was that not, because in my family, this was never a topic. But when I went to university, I first experienced, yes, there are some differences, but in my family, I never experienced that. So what about you, Elizabeth?
Well, I grew up with four brothers. Can you imagine that? There was a difference right there. But I learned to play baseball, climb trees, run, ski, do the chores with them. My parents had a wonderful farm. I did everything I could possibly do to connect with my brothers. And it served me well because I've worked with musicians, men who just profoundly influential in my life to help my music grow. The difference is when you come into a professional field, there's a attitude that is pervasive around the world that people should be in power, when in fact, with music, it's about sharing. And yes, we have soloists. That solo sound better be the top part. And luckily, that was my work. I did sing. I have been in situations where I know that there's a male dominance that exists in our society and in the world. And my father grew up with five sisters. I grew up with four brothers. He grew up with five sisters. And I always felt like he had the courage and the sensibility and the strength of being even more a man that understood the feminine. And of course, my grandmother, Maria, was a very powerful figure. And they supported her. But I think my grandfather, I never met him, but my aunt said, you look at your father, he's so similar to your grandfather. So I've been piecing together like a puzzle. How can I give voice to the fact that I am a woman? And I work every which way when I'm invited. And today it's with you. And I care for women. I care for this plight. And I give voice and I join your voice because it's time that we are allowed to offer the care that is in our hearts naturally. And we have a sensibility of unifying families or to make friendships or to be creative on a level that it just balances. There's a balance, and nature shows this. And we have to just speak a little bit louder. And I'm just now putting together a song. It's called The Question of Love. And I don't know if we have time for the lyrics.
Please, go ahead, Elizabeth.
Just so I speak these lyrics. And Sandy McCall wrote them, beautiful friend. But I speak this for your vision as you reach out caringly and sharing your faith for women globally. In the narrows of the night, you hear the question of love. When hope is stricken from your sight. You hear the question of love, beaten down with no reserve, wanting courage, wanting nerve. Keep your integrity preserved. You hear the question of love. Losing everything you had, you hear the question of love. In your coat, no longer clad, you hear the question of love. When the voice you had is gone, then in new sentences, new songs, you can rise up and carry on. It's just a question of love. And in the alleys of the damned echoes the question of love. Will you turn or will you stand to face that question of love? In the ruins, on the shoals, gathered round the open coals, there is a monarchy of souls seeking the answer to love. And in the parting of this place will be the question of love. You were born to live in grace within the question of love. When trials brought you to your knees, still you found honor undeceived. Now even heaven is well pleased because you hold the answer. You know the answer to love.
This was a very touching and beautiful piece of poetry, and I think it frames ideally what care is working for and what we are wishing for, especially in this moment where big parts of our planet drown in conflict and despair. And CARE, as I said, is one of the big humanitarian organizations in the world who have worked for more than 8 decades to make the world a better place, not only, but also for women and girls. It was an extreme honor and pleasure, Elisabeth von Trapp, to talk to you. Thank you that you shared many memories and valuable insights in your family life and also about you and your approach to life. I hope that many people go on Spotify not only to listen to the Care in Action podcast, but also try and listen to the albums of Elisabeth von Trapp. On behalf of CARE, I wish you all the best and thank you for being my guest. Thank you, Elisabeth. And yeah, it was really a pleasure to talk to you.
And Andrea, it was an honor to be with you. I love hearing what your impressions are because I have a deeper faith in your work now and what you have accomplished. And you give voice to all those 80 years. And I hear your voice. I hear CARE on a new level today because you've included me. And this is a great gift of the heart. And I thank you very much. And on behalf of my family's legacy and their message to the world, which they helped CARE way back, I feel so privileged that I'm included in my own life to be here with you. Thank you so very much.
Thanks to Elisabeth. Thanks to all our listeners. And let's do one thing. Let's take CARE together. Here and see you all next week. Have a good time. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. This was CARE in Action, the podcast by CARE Austria with Andrea Barstorff-Hager. For more information about CARE and our projects, visit care.at. There you'll also find out how you can support our work. This podcast is made possible with the generous support of CC Real. Thank you for your commitment, which enables this series of conversations. See you next time.